Serve It Cold, episode 23. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
Would you excuse me? Why, gallery, how may we help you today? Yes. That would be 40 Portraits and Pencil by Cindy Altman. The show just opened this past weekend. It's the first of its kind for the Why Gallery, and we are very pleased with all the attention Miss Altman's collection has brought us. Oh yes, it's caused quite a stir. 40, all large canvases. We had to be creative with our wall space to be able to display them all. Yes, all nudes. Well, each one is distinctly different, individual. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. I do apologize, this connection is just awful. Did you say Harless? Oh, Harkins, yes. Well, instead of describing each one individually to you, Mr. Harkins, I invite you to visit us in the French Quarter to examine them for yourself. They really are magnificent. No names. They're simply numbered 1 through 40. Number 40 is the only one with two subjects. Well, the prices vary. The least detailed one was valued by the artist at $800, but it has already sold. Sir, it is contrary to gallery policy to reveal the names of our clientele. The model, not the buyer? Well, I couldn't say. The form was beautifully rendered in every detail, but the features were partially obscured by... Mr. Harkins, what are you implying? We sell art at the Wyatt Gallery. Art, sir. And if you are not interested in purchasing art from us, why then, you may take your business elsewhere. Good day. I never.
Eaton was hacking away at the piles of evidence that had flooded in during the last 24 hours, so Butch was alone when he met me at the store. He carried me out to Burnt Bridge on Black Creek. A new concrete bridge now spanned the creek here, mocking the fires that had destroyed every other bridge built on the site for over 100 years. This was where Raginet and the Stratus had turned up. We walked up the rutted fisherman's trail to where the car sat while Butch told me the situation.
We caught a break. They could have tucked this thing into any other hole in the bushes in the county, and nobody would have found it for weeks or even months. But there were some kids out here looking for the headless woman last night, and they found Ray Raginet instead.
Yeah, we all had to come out and look for her, didn't we? In fact, do I remember hearing that you were stranded out here one night?
You heard right. I had to walk all the way to Hickman's store to use the payphone that night. I almost got sent to the training school for what I did to those two guys when I caught up with them. I almost ended my police career before it got started. They found Raginet's body about 10. We had people here by 10:15. These kids, of course, had cell phones. Engine was still warm when I got here, maybe 10:30.
Two police techs were still fooling around with the scene. This case was sure providing these guys opportunities to play with all their toys. I asked one of them, "You guys didn't spray this red dust on the car, did you?"
"No, that's just Mississippi red clay dust. I'll be sure to get a sample before we leave. We can analyze it, cross-reference it, and find out where it came from."
I just wanted to ask before I made a fool of myself. I haven't kept up with forensics since Quincy went off the air.
You may have something, Speedy. There are not many red clay roads in this part of Lamar County. There's sure none between here and New Orleans.
I don't think Raginet went back to New Orleans. I had a talk with his roommate this morning. He said he hadn't seen Ray since Tuesday.
You reliable?
Butch, he's the furthest thing you can get from reliable. But he was too drugged up to lie. Now... I think Ray spent his last 2 days close to Catherine.
Okay. Most of Hardy County is about as loamy as it is here. He could have gone west to Marion County, east to Perry, or north to Covington or Jones.
Covington is where he went, Butch.
Covington? What do you know that you're not telling, Speedy?
Nothing that you don't already know. For one thing, the last time I heard any statistics on the subject, Covington County had the most miles of unpaved public road of any county east of the Mississippi. So I've got the percentages on my side already. And the Granthams, Lily Banks, and Marie Sparks, Latimer's dead wife, all came from Covington County. I bet that there's still at least one farm left in the family up there.
So, you still think this is a family feud we're dealing with, even though the family is getting smaller by the day? I figure that if this thing goes to Monday, there won't be anybody left alive to arrest, and that includes you, Sherlock.
Big John would say nothing's changed but the dead people. Actually, Butch, I'm afraid everything's changed as far as any working hypothesis I might have had. But we picked up some brand new ideas down in New Orleans, and most of them have to do with Covington County. You want to ride with me up that way, or do you need to get back and help Eaton?
No. Eaton is truly in his element. By the time we get back, he'll have everything cataloged, cross-referenced, and spectral analyzed, or whatever it is he does with all those gadgets. Can we drop by and pick your car? I'd just as soon not drive the department's car up to Covington County. Next thing you know, some constable will be hassling me over jurisdiction.
Sure, if you don't mind driving. I think I might fall asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. Speedy, you look like...
Yeah, I know. Up late last night and early this morning. Much party, little sleep. And Vera refused to let me nap on the way home. I'm sure we kept talking, but the next thing I remember is waking up in the passenger seat of my van as we entered the town of Collins. Butch was yapping on the cell phone with the very constable he had been wanting to avoid irritating, and getting the lowdown on the location and ownership of all three farms in question. He was also writing notes as he talked, his pad resting on the center of the steering wheel. I had this sudden vision of Butch bumping into the car in front of us and the airbag shooting his own cross pen through his forehead. But then I remembered that we were in Old Blue, and the chances of that airbag still working were slightly less than the chances that the new Powerball ticket in my wallet would win $65 million come Saturday night. I put my head down and dozed some more. I woke when the van rolled to a stop. We had pulled into the driveway of a tidy South Mississippi farm. In fact, it was a bit too tidy. An expanse of mown lawn led up to the small, freshly painted farmhouse. There were the usual outbuildings scattered behind the house, an old smokehouse, a hay barn, a livestock barn, a pull-through tractor shed, and several cribs. But the lack of visible equipment, vehicles, farm animals, or a fall garden, told us that this was no longer a working farm. There was no car in the house's small carport. As we were getting out of the van, a log truck bounced by behind us on the ruts of the gravel road, throwing up a cloud of fine red dust. When the noise from the truck had subsided, Butch said,
"This is the Sparks place. The Grantham boys own more than a section up here, but they dozed the home place and have been managing it for deer and turkey hunting. The Banks farm is still standing, but it's on blacktop. This place has the only red clay option left. The constable says that Marie Sparks' sister has been living here for the past year or so."
"Yeah, that would be Cindy Altman, the artist. I meant to talk to you about her on the way up here." "I didn't talk to you on the way up, did I?"
"Unless you count the loudest snoring I've ever heard, no."
"Oh, good. I would have hated to have mumbled the clues to the lost Dutchman's mine in my sleep. So this red crap we're breathing looks like the dust on the Stratus. What else do you think we're going to find here?"
"Whoa there. This is your goose chase. I don't even know why I'm up here. What are these ideas you got down in New Orleans, Speedy?"
I gave him a sketchy version of what Vera had told me that morning as we slowly made our way around the farm's outbuildings. When I got to the part about Cindy's art show, he asked,
"You have pictures of these paintings?"
"Well, not paintings, but drawings. I'm not sure if they all turned out, Butch. Let me check." I pulled out my cell and punched up Vera as I walked a few steps away from Butch. He walked right along with me, letting me know that I wouldn't get any privacy without a pretty good explanation. When Vera answered, I said, "Hey, I was telling Butch about Cindy's drawings. Did all those pictures turn out?" Vera answered immediately,
"Go ahead and give it to him, Johnny."
"Are you sure?"
"Yep. I've been thinking about it since you left. I just want assurances that if they show my boobs in court, that they show Joe Harless's dick. Hell, I'm not ashamed of that drawing if you're not, Johnny.
No, no shame. In fact, just the opposite, babe. By the way, we're at the Sparks Farm. Somewhere between Collins and Seminary, I assume. I gave Butch a questioning look, and he nodded in return. I seem to have slept through the drive somehow. Did you ever visit up here? Any idea where someone might hide a Stratus and a Raginet on the farm?
No, I never went up to the farm. I do know that they had a storm pit. You might look for that.
Good idea. I'll talk to you later.
You be careful, Johnny Speed. Remember, there were two people in that car when it ran over Latimer.
I stood silent for a while, thinking about the Stratus's passenger before I realized that Butch was still waiting for his answer. I'd almost forgotten the question. Oh, yeah. We've got pictures of all the drawings. In fact, Vera reminded me we have a CD with them on it in the van. I'll give it to you when we get back. He didn't say anything, and he didn't move. He just looked at me with no expression that I could read. Okay, Vera was one of the House of Blue Lights 40. One of the drawings is of her. His eyes widened with surprise.
You gonna tell me next that the drawings are your naked butt, too?
No, you can relax on that account. But I can guarantee that you'll be surprised by who is in the drawings. Don't even ask me now. You have to see to believe. Vera just brought up the passenger in the car when Latimer was killed. You sure there was another person in that car?
Yep, he was there. All those runners saw him, too. Too dark to see details, but he was tall and thick-bodied. Could have been you, come to think of it.
Not me, boss. I'm all alibied up for that one. I was buzzing down the road with three witnesses at the time.
Speedy, you're the one who's insistent that alibis don't count in this case, right? Do you have one witness who is with you that would not lie to save your sorry hide?
I should hope not. I don't want friends who are not willing and capable of lying when needed.
Hell, I know it couldn't have been you, because you would have been slumped over in the seat snoring, and I didn't hear any snoring over the squealing of the wheels. No, it wasn't you, Speedy. But you were asking about what we might find here. I would put the passenger in the Stratus right up near the top of the list.
We worked our way around the cribs and the blacksmith shop that bordered the lower drive. We were climbing up toward the tractor shed when Butch stopped dead and swore under his breath. What? He nodded in the direction of the back of the farmhouse. The window pane in the upper half of the door had been broken, and the door was open. Butch pulled his gun and turned to me.
Speedy, do you have a handgun with you?
I've got one locked in my car safe.
Good. Leave it there. This back corner looked like the kitchen to you?
Yeah. Stove vent, sink drain.
Right. I want you to hunker down at that corner and keep an eye on the front of the house. Bad guy goes out the front, what do you do?
Slip around to the back side of the house, yell to you, take cover away from the house. Back of that smokehouse, I expect.
Good. Looks like Big John managed to knock some sense into that thick head. Do not go around front until you hear from me.
We did our jobs. I went to my corner and crouched, where, hopefully, the kitchen appliances and cabinetry would give extra protection from stray bullets. Butch went toward the back door and crossed the opening with his gun at ready before calling out. No answer. He called twice more and went in the door. A long 5 minutes later, he yelled,
"All clear!"
from the front. When I reached him, he said,
"The front door was open, too. No bad guys, but I think you'll agree that Raginet was here.
Pizza-flavored Pringles?
All over the place. Come on in. Just don't..."
I won't touch anything, Butch. Cross my heart. Our tour of the house was brief, and there wasn't much to see. No furniture, unless you count the battered twin mattress in the room that also contained the obligatory Raginet pile of empty beer cans and pizza-flavored Pringles cans. There was no evidence that Cindy Altman had been living there, except maybe the total absence of curtains and blinds on the tall south-facing windows of what must have been the living room. I could easily see this as her studio. The rest of the windows in the house had closed mini-blinds. The electricity was still turned on, and lights were on in several rooms. We went outside, and Butch turned to look at the house, his hands in his pants pockets.
This Cindy Altman, what does she look like?
Like a runway model, only prettier.
I don't know if I was seeing things last night or what, but if this is her house and Raganet was hiding out here, could she have been the passenger in the Stratus?
Don't worry, your eyesight's not totally gone yet. Actually, Cindy has an alibi. She was in Latimer's hot tub with Lily when the car hit Latimer.
And I suppose you've got pictures to prove this.
Yep. Date and time stamped. Gojo and Lurker. They're on the CD I've got for you. I'm sure there's other pictures, too. It's getting to be quite a show out on Lake Shady.
Funny how you just happen to always be providing alibis for the people we think are doing the killing, Speedy.
Butch, I've been telling you that for the better part of a week. I know I'm being played, but it seems that I'm always a step behind. Right now, I'm almost sure that Cindy is in this up to her pretty ass. But at this time yesterday, I was sure Latimer was the one behind it all. Butch called Marianne so she could start the process that would end up with Catherine's evidence guys adding even more hours of overtime to their week. Constable Jeff showed up and agreed to babysit the place until the guys with the crime scene tape could get there. We headed back to Catherine. All the way home, Butch systematically picked my brain for all the details I could give him on the Grantham family, Cindy Sparks and Ray Raganet, while being characteristically close-mouthed about any information he had gotten. You can put a cop behind the wheel of a 10-year-old minivan, but you can't make him talk. Back at the house, I cranked up my new iMac to show Butch some of Gojo's pictures from the lake. Then I pulled up the pictures from the gallery. We'd gone through 3 or 4 pictures when I saw Butch in my peripheral vision glance over toward me, then freeze, his face beet red. I knew my wife had come home. I said, without looking behind me, "Honey, before you do anything, I just want you to know that I forgot to pay up my life insurance this month."
"Don't worry, dear. I've been noticing that your insurance has been the last bill getting paid every month, and I just had the bank put it on automatic draft. You won't ever have to be reminded about it again."
I was afraid of that. "Seriously, would you help me go through these again? I don't know some of the people that you recognized this morning. You can get a better look on the flat screen."
"Have you looked at my drawing yet?"
"Nope. And by the way, how did you get in here without setting off the infamous yard full of dogs?"
"They love me, that's how. Pull it up right now."
Butch turned even redder and started to squirm in his seat, but he didn't bolt. I was starting to believe that Butch Ellis was a truly brave man. I opened the file and there she was, leaning forward on tiptoe, those bodacious breasts just catching up with the full swing of her body. Butch had become very still. I began to worry that he wasn't breathing.
"Butch, I just want to make one thing clear. They look exactly like that today. Just ask my darling husband."
It was my turn to be very still. Vera pulled a chair up between us.
"Okay, boys, now let's look at some naked men."
Over the next hour, we did look at naked men and naked women. Butch's reaction at Judge Harless's drawing was priceless. We also banged around different theories of what was really going on. Both Butch and I thought that the passenger in the Stratus was the next key mystery to solve. Vera, true to her own contrary nature, was now ready to dismiss him as unimportant. "But, honey, you're the one who brought up the passenger in the first place."
"Sure. That was because you two lunkheads were about to be walking around an abandoned farm. I was worried you'd get your fool head shot off."
"But the passenger might well be our shooter, at least for Raganet. And he may be pulling the strings for this whole thing."
"Maybe he is the shooter. But the only one pulling strings is Cindy. I haven't talked to her in years, but way back when she was Cynthia Sparks, she was already an expert at manipulation. She's incredibly intelligent. She's got great discipline and she's capable of great rage. I'm also willing to bet that the only person she ever really cared a damn about was her sister, Marie. I'm telling you both, this thing centers on Cindy."
"Wow. That's a change in attitude from this morning, Vera."
"Yes, it is. It's a big change from anything we've talked about right up until today. But Johnny, after all the lecturing you give about sharing information, You're the only one who had an inkling that Cindy was involved at all in this mess, and you didn't tell anybody else. I've spent an afternoon thinking about the House of Blue Lights and maybe reliving some of those emotions. I didn't realize back then, hell, I don't think I was capable of critical thought back then, but it was Cindy who was the grand orchestrator. She seduced and bullied, begged and bribed us all to join her grand party. She spouted a philosophy of pansexualism as a cure for all of the world's ills, but Cindy never took part in the sex herself. She was always the director, the puppet master, the artist, maybe the voyeur. She despised men as weak.
She cut me a quick glance.
Well, maybe she was right about some things. But the bottom line is that if Cynthia Sparks thought that Ray Ragonet killed her sister, that's why he's dead. And if she thought that the Granthams had anything to do with it, that's why they're dead.
Butch sat back, rubbing his face. I knew what he was feeling. It's hard to reset that old meta model of the world. But Vera was taking no prisoners.
Okay, Butch. It's your turn to do some sharing. I'm not asking you to break any laws or anything, but we need to know some of what you know.
Okay. Go ahead and ask.
We got word through Gojo that Ray Ragonet was involved in a New Orleans honeymoon scheme. Did that involve Latimer's wife, Marie?
No, it didn't. But that case did happen on the Gulf Coast, too. Ragonet wasn't the driver, but he rented the car that was allegedly stolen, then used to kill a newlywed heiress. The police found it interesting that Ragonet had rented a car at the Gulfport Airport when he had not flown into Gulfport. In fact, he was living in Biloxi and had two cars in good condition sitting in his driveway. He was also working as a bouncer for one of the Dixie Mafia strip joints on the coast at the time. He was questioned, but it didn't go anywhere.
Were there anybody's fingerprints in the Stratus beside Ragonet's and the owner's?
Yeah, Latimer Grantham's. Interesting, isn't it? But we know that Latimer wasn't the passenger, Mr. Tall, Wide, and Printless. There is one more thing that's been bouncing around in my mind all day, and it might not mean anything at all. Vera, you grew up in Covington County, didn't you?
Yes, near Salem.
Did y'all hear about Burnt Bridge when you were growing up?
About the Headless Woman? Sure, a bunch of us made the trip down one Halloween. But I didn't see anything but drunk teenagers wandering around in the swamp.
You know the legend, that her head was cut off by her husband's sword when he came back from war and found her sleeping with another man.
Yes, but Butch, where is this going?
Well, you know that Speedy and I both grew up right around that swamp, and I just wasn't sure how far the legend was known. It may be all just in my head, but there is one thing that sort of resonates about finding Ragonet there. When Marie Sparks was hit, she was thrown into a steel highway barricade and was decapitated. That was never widely known, for obvious reasons, but I couldn't keep from thinking of that all the time I was out there.
A cell phone chirped to life, and we all three reached for pockets. It was for Butch. He got up and walked out to the front porch. I considered following him as he had me, but figured that wouldn't win me any brownie points. I turned back to find Vera clicking through Gojo's pictures of Cindy and Lily.
These were from the lake last night? Oh my God, Johnny. I don't ever want you to complain about me depriving you of fantasies. These pictures should keep you chugging right on into dotage.
Well, thank heaven somebody's thinking about us old lecherous fools. Butch came back through the front door, walking fast.
We're a dollar short and a day late again, Speedy. Barton went out to the lake to talk to Lily, and she's gone. And I mean gone. Two cars in the driveway, but the house has been cleaned out just like the Sparks house. They're running.
Later, I walked out to the car with Butch. I couldn't believe it was still light outside. It seemed that the day had already lasted 2 weeks. I was tired. So tired.
I'm going to have to stop calling you Hercule Poirot, Speedy. As I see it from here, you're only the second best detective in your family.
That's all too true. Well, it looks like our part is over in this thing. It's up to you guys now. Thanks for taking my people seriously, and for trusting us, Butch. We really wanted to help you. I'm sorry we weren't just a bit quicker.
You were a big help, Speedy. Hell, you got Barton smiling again for the first time in months. And if it weren't for you, there wouldn't be a case against these women when we do catch them. I'll talk to you tomorrow. But Speedy, get some sleep. You look like you've been drugged behind old Blue from here to New Orleans and back.
I'm going to do just that. Just as soon as I can crawl back into the house. Vera was still glued to the pictures from the night before. I gave her a kiss and told her to wake me up when she was ready for me to cook supper. Then I stumbled back to that old familiar trench in my bed and tumbled into sleep.
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com. Here's Michelle Malone with Beyond the Mountain, to gently rock Johnny off to sleep. Hush now.
Try to move a mountain. Try to calm the sea. Try to love somebody who just don't love me. I feel like a candle trying to light up the sky, and the cold wind keeps blowing, and I'm losing my mind. I know somebody someday, then heartache will leave me. When love comes to stay, but I feel like a boxer, eyes too swollen to see. Get back to my corner and give mystery.